Hello, AIM members. Thank you for tuning in to the Broker to Broker podcast. I'd like to give a big shout out to the sponsor of today's episode, AFR Wholesale, a 2020 sponsor of AIM. To learn more about them, email partnerships@aimgroup.com.
Hey, welcome to Broker to Broker. This podcast is all about real talk from one broker to another. Each week, we'll be talking with an AIM member about their journey into the broker channel, their challenges, and unique insights. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome to Broker to Broker, brought to you by AIM, Association of Independent Mortgage Experts. I am JP Hussey of the Hussey Team Mortgage Advisors, and today I got my buddy Brendan McKay of McKay Mortgage. What's up, man?
Dude, hell yeah. Excited to be here, man.
Yeah.
Good way to spend a Monday.
Coming all the way from right outside D.C., right?
Yep, Bethesda, Maryland, right outside D.C., yep.
Okay. And I may have told you before, because we know each other. Brendan's a good dude. I was born in D.C.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You didn't tell me that.
Oh, I never did?
Nice.
All right. So, yeah, half my family's D.C.,
right?
So, and two of my aunts, they live in Olney. So okay. That's not far.
No, I do Lunds and Olney all the time. Right. Absolutely.
So half my family is Redskins fans, and then other half Eagles fans. So I'm Eagles, though.
Okay.
All right.
You're
a Skins fan?
Yeah, less and less every day.
Well, they won yesterday, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah.
Blind good squirrel, grab nah, the nut.
Until Dan Snyder sells the team, I'm out. But yeah, that's how I feel about that. More of a Wizards fan.
More okay.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Remember when Jordan played for the Wizards?
I do. That was weird.
Let's just talk sports all day. all right, cool. So I'm kind of upset mom didn't come.
I know. Her. I'm sorry.
She's the best team.
I needed her back home. Not just for the business, but for the family.
Yeah,
help too.
I got
but
you.
Yeah.
But we'd be drinking some Bloody Marys if she was here.
No, right. Yeah, absolutely. And my mom is not only my mom and wonderful, but also my business partner.
Yeah.
So yeah, the two of us work together and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So you just had a baby girl, right?
I just had a baby girl.
How old is she now?
She's 4 months. My son just turned 2. So
nice.
Life is crazy.
So yeah, are you sleeping? Because I haven't slept in 8 years.
I'm
I have 3.
Sleeping, but I'm sleeping less. No, it's not too bad. We were lucky. They're both good sleepers. Yeah, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So all right, let's dive in, because like we talked about before, you know mortgages. That's what you know.
I do.
Right?
It's the only thing I know.
And I'm over here talking with people because I need to know mortgages more.
Oh, well, good. What you got out of this. Now you know.
Right?
Yeah.
I want to dive in because I know your mom has been in the business forever.
Yes.
Right? So let's take it back there. Even.
Okay.
Can we do that? Can we
from her beginning?
Yeah, let's start there. I'd love to know the whole, because I'm a big family business guy.
Sure.
Like, we're called the Hussey team, you know, yep. The whole thing. My brother's with me, you know. So I'd love to know the backstory of that.
So she got started in the mortgage industry a little before I was born. She was bartending, and that's how she met my dad.
Hence the Bloody Marys.
Hence the Bloody Marys. And wanted to get a 9-to-5. And the mortgage business has always been, much more so than other businesses, a very much equal opportunity industry. There, you see a lot of women in leadership.
That's a really good point.
So she started working at a bank called BF Saul, which has since been owned by Chevy Chase Bank and is now part of Capital One. And she started working there as an originator and quickly went into more the operations management side of things. So most of her background is actually in managing wholesale operation centers. So we've always kind of been a wholesale family.
Cool.
And when I graduated college in 2005, she had just opened up a regional office for a company called American Brokers Conduit that a lot of people might remember from back in the day.
Okay.
And she wanted me to come work for her. I was like, I'm not going to go work for my mom. No chance, you know.
Yep.
And this was in 2005, which was very... pretty good time
right.
for mortgages, right?
Sure.
And she's like, well, here's what I'm going to pay you. And so I end up working for three or four of my buddies were working there by the end of it, all in operations. At first, I was running the closing department over there.
Cool.
And then kind of a account rep assistant position. Every company has a different name for it. We called them BRMs back then.
Mm-hmm.
And managed the account rep I worked for had Carteret Mortgage, which is actually the biggest broker shop ever nationally.
What was the name of that again?
Carteret.
Are they still?
No,
they're going
Yep. And so we managed them nationally, did about $40 million a month with that account. So it was good times for a while there. And worked for my mom. We had about 50 people in the office. And then One Monday, we're not funding loans anymore.
What year was this?
It was 2008, August 2008. Okay. I remember.
Yep.
And by Friday, Friday, everyone's out of the job. And
it's insane, man.
It was completely insane. So at the time, my mom, her responsibility was to find as many jobs for everyone as possible. We had over 50 operations people, a dozen account reps. How many people can I move? And the best opportunity for everyone was with Vertice, which was a subdivision of Wachovia that has a no nepotism policy.
Okay.
So I got left in the dust. And bounced around as an account rep for a couple companies in the next 6 months. And it was just like very different environment. And I'm like, you know what? I'm out of here. Went into financial planning. So I did financial planning for 2 or 3 years and didn't like it, but was like, once I'm successful, I'll like it. And then I started doing okay and I still didn't like it. And kind of missed mortgages, oddly. I just loved the, you know, how much energy there was helping people buy houses is awesome, yada, yada. So I went back into operations, as like a junior underwriter type position with Sierra Pacific Mortgage.
Okay.
At that point, my mom, the companies were closing and weren't exactly looking for regional managers. So she was actually volunteering full-time at the Red Cross at that point.
Okay. Yeah.
And like lots of bad storms. She was traveling around to different parts of the country, helping out with that kind of stuff.
Dude, she's an amazing woman.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's the best. She really is.
A lot of people will say, oh, you work with your mom. That's so cool. Like, I could never work with my mom. And I'm like, yeah, I probably couldn't work with your mom either. Like, my mom is, she's amazing. And knows her stuff. No one ever has a bad word to say about her. Certainly not to me. But, like, she's just great. And so we both got our license. And actually, at that point, I started at Sierra Pacific. And Liz Collins was the operations manager I worked for. And sat me down shortly after I started and said, you know, what do you want to do? And I'll always be so thankful for her. Do you want to become an account rep or a loan officer?
Cool.
And so I got licensed. My mom got licensed. And I was working full-time in underwriting while originating loans on the side.
Okay.
And she would take over and do the processing and stuff like that. And we hung our licenses with one of the retail branches at Sierra Pacific. And it was a good refinance market, so that helped. And all the financial planners I knew, that definitely helped. So
what was this, like 2011? I remember. 2011, that's right when I started then. In the business at Wells.
It was a good time.
Yeah, it was a refi. I remember that's how I got in and you learn how to structure deals, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was working a ton doing both and the goal basically building up the pipeline to the point that, I was making more money originating loans than I was at the 9-to-5. So it's like, all right. So we opened up a branch of Sierra Pacific and it was just the two of us. And everything went great and we kind of got everything rolling, got our clients built up and all that stuff. But always knew we were probably going to go with the broker angle eventually.
Okay.
It was kind of a step by step. And when everything crashed and I knew I wanted to get back in, I my goal was to have as much control as possible. Cause I felt like when everything crashed, I was really good at my job. I felt like I was doing a good job. I was playing by the rules. Here are the rules. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it all got taken away, right? Which, and I was like, this is total bullshit.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
So wanted to have as much control as possible. We're obviously still a little bit at the, dictated by the market. But as long as I'm doing better than the next guy, we should be okay.
So you always had an idea in the back of your head, like, we're going to own something or run something. Because you know the rules.
Yep.
I mean, I've seen you out there. I think you were with my boy Evan Wade. You guys were, lobbying or doing something, right?
Yeah, we do that. Yeah.
Yeah, love to get into that. But you always had in the back of your mind that you're going to have – you want the control.
Yep.
And I've said this on many other podcasts, but there's a misconception that brokers don't have control. We have more control.
No, it's the opposite. And one of the biggest – so we became brokers in April of 2000 and where are we? April of 2016.
16, okay.
Or 17, whatever. Anyways,
so. Yeah, it's been 2.5 years maybe.
Yeah, okay. And the biggest, like, not surprise, but it's like now we're the client, right? Like when you're captive retail, like, yeah, you have some control on this and that, but like you all, if you're not happy with the way things are going, Tough shit. Yeah. Like, you need to go work somewhere else. Where if I'm a broker and a lender's not meeting the standards that I expect them to.
Yeah, for your client, trickles down.
Yeah, right? And guess what? Like, they're not going to get any loans from us anymore. And the good ones know that. And they have to step up to the plate every single time. So, I can see how that's an easy, like, level one argument. We have less control. But once you really have a conversation about
that's
it.
That's the surface level thing that everyone says. When I was in retail, that's all we thought. Like, that's what you were told. They have no control. They're going to throw shit against the wall. The whole thing. Yeah,
it is. It's believable, so people believe it.
Yeah exactly. All right, so to get back, you guys, so you and your mom, do you guys own McKay Mortgage?
Yep, we're 50-50.
50-50.
Yep.
So that was in end of 2016, maybe 17 is when you
started forming it and stuff like that. And actually, we decided earlier than that. We knew we were going to do it, and then all the new CD and LE stuff came out, and my mom and I are good partners for a lot of reasons, but one of them is we're a good balance. I'm always like, let's go, let's go, let's go. Uh-huh. And she's much more like, look before you leap, which is good. And we find a happy balance in between the two. But it was like, let's see the fallout from all this compliance change before we do it. Uh-huh. And then actually the last delay was my wife and I wanted to buy a house before making the switch. So I wouldn't qualify for a mortgage, you know?
Right.
So like you think about stuff like that. So we bought our house and then really pushed it forward after that point.
What's really cool as I'm listening to your story, it's, you started not in sales. You were more operations.
Yeah. Yep.
And I remember the first time we spoke or met, you had told me that like McKay Mortgage is really just like we're a bunch of operations and underwriters.
Yep.
Right?
No, and it's our biggest competitive advantage. Like I tell people, like, we make mistakes like everyone else. I think we make a lot less so. Like, we really do pre-underwrite the files, and not just my mom, but also Matt Lindy, who is our office manager, processor. He underwrote for 5 or 6 years, smartest person I know.
Yeah.
So like those files, we are underwriting them at the pre-approval stage, and when they go into underwriting, they're coming out clean. And like, we've never had a loan suspended, we've never had a loan denied. That kind of stuff just doesn't happen to us. We make mistakes, but we catch them early and we have plenty of time.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
There's stuff you can't just forecast, you can't see.
No, but I think our files, we do a really good job, and it just provides a cleaner client experience, and they can tell that, you know, we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they're happy and they refer us, and that's really our business model.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought that was important to note, your guys' background, because it's tough to just get into mortgages.
Yes.
I think with the more and more automation coming and with social media, there could be people, and no, you know, shot to them. They might just think, wow, there's good money in this. We can just jump in and see what happens.
No. And I mean, I don't like that happens, but I don't think it's good for the industry. But selfishly, it's great for me because the less competent our competition is, the better it is for us.
Sure.
It makes us look better.
Sure.
But no, I mean, that's what happened, 2005, 2006. Absolutely.
Yeah. So for people maybe looking to get into the industry, and we were speaking a little bit about this before, you have to kind of cut your teeth somewhere because it's no fault to you if you don't get it. Like, it sounds sexy, but it has to click at some point, right?
No, I mean, mortgages are really complicated, man. Yeah. And like the guidelines are expansive, and not only that, but like, it's a big deal on the client. Like, you screw up someone's purchase, and like,
this is real life.
That's a lot of responsibility. And you're not just screwing it up for them. You could be screwing it up for the seller and all these other people that are counting on you to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a responsibility that we take lightly. And like, our experience in operations is like a PhD in mortgages. Mm-hmm. We don't know all the answers, but we know where to find them.
Yeah. But you made a great point. Like, we had a closing on Friday for a couple friends of mine, and I knew they had to sell their house before they could buy this one because they needed the cash, right?
Yeah.
For that, and the same day, you know, let's wire the proceeds over to just transfer. They got some money back. But I didn't realize that the person buying their house, they had someone even before them buying.
Yeah.
And then the one that they were buying, the sellers were sitting there buying their other house. I mean, that could have been a chain of 6 or 7, 8 families.
Yep.
And if one company or LO or something happens, that can screw up everything for that many people.
Yeah.
It's insane. I don't think people realize it sometimes.
No, and you should be aware of it. Sometimes you can drive yourself crazy and not sleep at night thinking about
it too much. And I want to get into that soon. But there's a fine line over worrying. But if you don't worry, maybe there's
you should be doing something else. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, and it's why I love the business. Like, it is important and it matters to people. And like, we do a great job and they appreciate it. And like when I realized when I switched from financial planning, and I was helping people and we were doing all these great things, but it wasn't the same. It was like they're just checking something off a box and you're chasing people, you know, and it's like the fifth most important thing on their to-do list. But when you help someone buy a house, like that's just like an unforgettable moment for them. And it's like really important and it's awesome. And like, I don't know,
as much
it makes
as
you feel good, man.
We love the money and there's good money in this. There's something, like you said, it makes you feel good. I mean, that's what we're really living for. Yeah. I mean, you can really get the best of both worlds in this industry.
No, you absolutely can. Yeah.
All right. So back to, I want to dive in a bit more because I want to know about, selfishly, about your operations.
Okay.
All right. So you and mom, 50-50.
Yep.
Right? Any other, no other loan officers right now?
We actually have one other loan officer. Okay. Diane Cook. She's amazing. You phrase it that way because I've told JP before, we're not really actively looking to grow with as many loan officers as possible.
Yeah.
But Diane's amazing. My mom's known her for 30 years. Just, you know. Clean loans, knows what she's doing, no fuss, no muss.
And you guys are licensed in Maryland, I guess. Does D.C. have a different license?
Yep, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, and Delaware.
Okay, those are the ones.
Yeah,
to be
and
in
I mean,
for,
we're
for
right
you.
On the D.C. border. And so if you're where we are, if you don't have Maryland, D.C., Virginia, you absolutely have to have them.
Yeah. Okay, so you have, I'm sorry, what was her name again?
Diane. Yep.
Yourself, you're more of the lead for your little team.
Yep.
Right? You're the lead. Mom is more back end?
So, yeah. So I'll run it down. So my mom, everyone's licensed. I do the bulk of the origination. My mom does like more big picture stuff, deals with all the compliance stuff, accounting, just office type of stuff. And obviously I go to her a lot on complicated stuff. I mean, having my mom as a resource, she's a mortgage encyclopedia, has forgotten more about mortgages than I know. So we talk a lot about that kind of stuff. And then Matt Lindy is our office manager. And once, you know, on a refinance, they say, all right, let's do it. Or on a purchase or under contract, he takes it and runs with it.
Yeah, you say office manager, but, I mean, there's everything that he's doing, right? Is he processing?
I mean, I set everything up, but, like, I have it made. I don't run DU or LP. The only thing I ever do on lenders' websites is price loans out.
Okay.
I'm really not... like mess around with any of that stuff. I get the point file set up and all that stuff.
Okay.
But then it's like, all right, I do a handoff and I work on that handoff. I think it's extremely important. I'm
so
still
important.
Involved, but like I prop Matt up and I'm not like gassing him. I'm not doing it with nonsense, but like Matt is the man and you know, I let them know that.
Yeah.
And he takes it and runs with
it
from
there. Strengths and weaknesses. This is, I mean, again, selfishly, I get to talk to a lot of awesome people. And I'm starting
you're
to see.
At me when you say that.
Yeah, you. But it's really mom. No, okay. But everyone, and it's very tough to do. Strengths and weaknesses. It's tough to say I'm not that good at this part, and then being able to have a smooth handoff to someone that's better. Like it's so important for a business and a team.
No, you do what
I
want to
keep hammering that home, man. No. It's something I'm working on too.
I could at that kind of stuff, but Matt's better. And give it to the person that's best at it and let them do with it and get out of the way. And I still have that attitude, and I know I still sometimes get in his way a little bit, but I try not to.
Yeah.
But my strength is interacting with the client, getting them comfortable with us, talking about different ways to structure the deal and figuring out what makes the most sense to them. And then letting Matt do what he does best.
Yeah, I mean, to do, like you told me, and I hope you don't mind if I say that, but to do about 70 mil this year, having a new baby, I mean, that's going to be, what, 175, 200 units?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I did the math.
And if I try to get involved with everything going on, it's just there's not enough hours in the day. It's not even possible.
But it's not good for the client either.
It's not good for anyone.
Like, I think that's like you said, the handoff is so important.
Yeah.
Because it's only obviously for you in time, but it trickles down to the client. Like, if you're burned, they're not. It's just not going to get done.
No.
I mean, it sounds simple, but it is complex.
And I'm still there at certain touch points and stuff like that. And you know, I go to as many closings as I can.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff. So I'm still involved, but like, no, let Matt do his thing.
Yeah. So what is your system? You said Point, right?
We're using Point, but we are going to switch over to Arrive probably January, February next year.
Okay.
We've been meaning to for a while. It was like we were going to do it at the beginning of this year, and then everything happened.
Oh, yeah. It takes time to learn that, but, you know, it's moving along. I mean, Arrive office is right across the street.
Yeah.
Like, they're banging it out. I'm here enough to see that. Let's talk about if we could, I love to, I think you're going to like this, is once a client comes to you,
okay,
right? What's the first thing you do after that? Is it an online application? Is it just a phone call, not getting information? Is it all verbal? Could you break it down until it goes to closing? Even?
Yeah, sure. So that'd like on a purchase transaction, let's just say whoever referred, a realtor, past client, whoever, and the very first thing I do is say, hey, let's get on the phone. Let's get on the phone for 15 minutes, get on the same page is the way that I phrase it. And I just want to talk to them. I use an online application for some people. I honestly usually don't.
Okay.
I'll have a conversation with them, find out, and usually with if it's a first-time home buyer is the best example. I won't even talk about price range or anything like that. I'll talk about what are you paying in rent right now, what's the number that you're comfortable with, what are you budgeting for, and build the numbers
backwards.
Yeah,
let's only talk first-time home buyer real quick.
Yep, first-time home buyer. Okay. So, all right, they're paying $1,500 a month in rent. Can you go up a little bit for that? Are you comfortable there? Da-da-da. No, I can get $2,500. How much cash do you have to work with? What's your credit score look like? And you can get a sense if someone has excellent credit or not. We're fortunate enough in our area. A lot of people do have really strong credit. So I don't worry about as much of that stuff.
To give everyone an idea, where you live is like the main line around Philly.
Okay. Okay.
It's a pretty ritzy type area outside D.C. For the most part.
It's really nice.
I'm just giving people local.
Yeah. But, okay. I mean, yeah. No, it's a super nice area. We're super fortunate for sure. So I'll have that conversation with them. I put a couple different options together. Usually if it's a first-time home buyer, I'll do FHA. Even if they're not an FHA borrower, I want to show it to them.
Cool.
I'll show them usually if home ready, home possible. Ready, if they qualify for it, those income limits change. Killed me.
Yeah, right.
But, I did so much home ready, home possible. And it's 95 in our area. But
is
it?
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll show them that. With borrower paid and maybe lender paid, less so now, borrower paid MI got a lot more aggressive this year. And I'll show them three different options and have a conversation with them. I show them FHA just because
compare it.
Yes. And it starts the conversation of rate's not everything, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and I don't mean it the way retail loan officers say rate's not everything. I'll be like, look, this is an FHA loan. This is the lowest rate. But look, this is not the best option for you. And I do, I call it a mortgage 101. I go through them with them. We have our own spreadsheet that we kind of designed that shows three options side by side with each other. It shows everything, but doesn't overload them with information, meaning it lumps all the closing costs together, all that stuff.
After you got their info, pulled their credit too?
No.
This is before you even pull credit.
If I have a conversation with them and they go, oh, I have great credit. In my experience, most people, if they say they have great credit, they probably have great credit.
Okay.
Do you pay your bills on time? Do you do this or that? And I tell them, I go, if I pull your credit and your credit sucks after you said it was good, I understand these numbers are going to be a little different, but you know.
Yeah.
Most people are reasonable and understand that. If they start hesitating about what their credit score is, I know that we might want to pull it beforehand.
Sure. Okay.
And I just want to, because that is an objection a lot of people have. I don't want you to pull my credit. So I just want to get them comfortable, ease into it.
100%.
Show them all those figures. Okay, awesome. We need to get you pre-approved. I send them a list of documents. I honestly do not even send an online application to most of those people now still. I'll send them a list of documents. And from the list of documents...
This is before you even pull credit, too.
Yeah, I pull credit.
Okay, I'll
get the W-2s. I'll get the driver's license. That gives me social security number. Gives me date of birth. Gives me name, address. Their pay stubs, obviously income, all that stuff. I'm not going to ask them I'll ask them what their income is, but I can pull it from pay stubs and W-2s.
Yeah.
And then enough of our clients are on LinkedIn. I can get their job history from that. I just put it together,
A lot of people say pre-underwriting. You're literally like an underwriter, like a file submitted from a loan officer.
I mean,
you're taking and calculating yourself and doing it for them.
If they don't,
which is cool.
Even if they don't send me their driver's license, I'll look them up on Facebook. Enough people have their date of birth up, like the information's out there. And I want to get all the information I need, but put as little on them as humanly possible, right? Because people are busy. They have a lot going on in their lives. I recognize it. I refinanced myself this year 2 months later than I should have because I'm busy, So I want to make the barrier to entry as low as humanly possible for people while still having complete information.
Yeah.
So I do all that, get them pre-approved. We use Google Drive for our secure cloud
stuff. Yeah, go as detailed as you want to. I want people to know what you're doing.
And we use that for all our file systems too. So we have everything we have is on Google Drive. And we back it all up, obviously, too. But we use Google Drive. We share a folder with them. They upload all the stuff. We move it over to our preliminary folder where I work out of. When it goes live, everything, we just move the folder over. Super easy. Get them pre-approved at that point. If I need follow-up documents, I mean, we are reviewing everything.
Yeah.
So it's like if we see something, we ask for a follow-up. Send an excited, your pre-approved email. I usually do not write blanket pre-approval letters.
Okay.
I write it specific to the offer. And I'll communicate that with the realtor. If they want a TBD one, I'll do it. But like, I do that for a couple reasons. First, in our area, it is hyper competitive for as far as buyers are concerned. They're usually in a multiple offer scenario. So it just looks better. It looks cleaner to the listing agent. They can see we're paying attention. But also, I want to know when that offer is going in. I'm going to proactively reach out to the listing agent, tell them how wonderful our clients are, how well qualified they are. But the real point of it is it lets them vet me. We're doing a good amount of business, but most realtors don't know who we are, you know, and that's okay. And I want them comfortable with us, that we know what we're doing and stuff like that. And just getting in front of everything possible. Think about all the potential problems that could happen and proactively try to solve them.
How about note-taking for each client? Do you have a system for that?
Yeah, I write down notes.
I
write them down. We have our notepads. I write them down, and I take a picture of it with my phone. Then I email it to myself, and then I upload it to their Drive folder.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so you're, that's our system. It's not, you know, the most highly technological, but it works for us.
But that's where I'm seeing everything going, is using the – and I've said this before. Things are going to get more automated. It's just going to happen. But there has to be a fine line between that automation and technology and the human touch, right? I mean, we've talked about this so many times, you know, battling Quicken and what they're doing, right? And you coming with a financial planning background, that kills you, because you want to set up a true plan for someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And use the technology. So if there's a way to use the technology to make our job better and easier, it's only going to, again, trickle down to the client to help them out, right? Would you say?
You're absolutely right. And like, we've talked about changing other systems, and when we do implement Arrive, we'll probably change some of our systems with it, but first and foremost, it's just got to work.
Yeah. You know? With Arrive, you might know more about it than me, but they have like a Dropbox or Google Drive set up. Okay, so you don't know.
Sweet,
All right, we'll talk about this later.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So let's say now you've built the trust, you got the client's offers accepted, right? So now where's it go at this point? To Matt?
I try, depending on timing, to actually meet with the client in person at that point. And I have enough that I can print out all the application disclosure documents, and I'll meet with them and sometimes add some additional information to it and tighten up how many years they're in school, whatever, stuff like
with
that.
The little things.
Meet with them if humanly possible, go through it, and then explain, all right, cool, guess what, like, you're going to get this, you know, disclosed to you by email, and you're going to sign all the same stuff over again. And I do it. Our business is completely referral based. We are not, you know, doing any aggressive pay for online marketing or anything like that. And people are much more likely to refer somebody they met in person than a voice over the phone or an email.
And those are the best leads to get, obviously.
By far. Right? And so I'll try to meet with them if possible. If it doesn't allow for it, you know, I'm not going to hold the deal up over it, obviously. And then take all that back, scan it, update Matt with everything. He gets the automated disclosures out. I do the handoff email at that point. We just get it locked. When I'm talking to people about locking, I really, and this is something that kind of drives me nuts about our industry, I do not take the market's going this way or the market's going that way.
Yeah.
I stay educated. I know what's happening in the market, and I know what's impacting it, but I do not. I'm not in the business of predicting the market. I would be a bond trader if I was.
Right.
And even if I know which way it's going to go, it's a 55-45 situation, and I'm not comfortable advising someone on how they're going to hold hundreds
especially
of thousands of dollars worth of debt.
Right now where everything is. You have no idea.
No clue.
It's insane.
And, yeah. So I explain it to people. I go, I mean, first of all, if the terms are the same as the last time we looked at them, we're just locking. We're moving on.
Yeah.
But I'm saying we can talk about where things are going. Here's my advice. We can lock. And if rates go up, we're protected. If they go down a little bit, that's the cost of this protection. And if they go down a lot, we can either renegotiate with the current lender, or if time allows,
go
somewhere else. And that's not a business practice I like to do, but it is an option. It's an advantage to being a broker, and you need to put your advantages out there.
It's a true teamwork with the client.
Yeah.
If you're transparent with, like, this is where we're at, you know, something happens, we have other avenues to go. I'm not saying we should,
no,
but we have it there. And it's ultimately their decision.
Yep.
We're really an advocate for the client, really.
I mean, and you advise them, but yeah, at the end of the day, they're our client, and we're going to guide them, but they're going to drive the ship. And so I present locking as it's the best of both worlds. You get full protection, you can still participate in some upside. So why wouldn't you lock if that was the case? That's the way I look at it. So then we get it locked. We get it submitted. We update, obviously, at different times. And we're actually working very excited about Arrive because it'll help automate a lot of that different stuff. And getting in front of pain points. One of the broker panels at Fuse, his last name was Davis. Really sharp guy.
Tony?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we had him
Florida,
on here.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he talked about get in front of their pain points. So, like, buying a home is a scary process. And so is refinancing. It can be. Like, they're looking at numbers in different formats. Get ahead of it. Be the one driving the conversation. And make them feel comfortable so they're not ever in a situation like they get a bunch of numbers. What is this? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't want them confused.
No.
So, go through, you know, the process, get the appraisal back, title, yada, yada, go to closing. I do, less so this year on the refinances, I do try to attend all my purchase closings in person because that's a happy time, and then do our follow-up after that.
Yeah, I'd love to talk a little bit more about the purchase and refi, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will say, and you have to be, long-term, you want to always be in front of purchases and getting those type of referrals because that builds your book of business. And then later on, they may refinance.
Yep.
No one stays in a 30-year mortgage ever. It's there to make it affordable, right? So, yeah, a lot of times when I'm speaking with clients, it's, you know, if they're purchasing, listen, a couple years from now, we're going to look at it. Like a 15 years is the sexy one. I get it. But let's look in a couple years. Like this is only the stepping stone to get you into a better spot, right?
Absolutely.
So a lot of people say, a lot of people get pissed about refinances. I don't want to do them or they're I love doing them too because it's a true financial strategy, right?
Absolutely.
So could you talk a little bit more about the purchase versus refi? And
so, yeah, we're doing a ton of refinances right now. We're doing a ton of purchases too. And the way I've looked at purchases this year, I'm like, they just have to get done. They have 100%. To get done. They have to get cleanly. We're at capacity, but we cannot let a purchase transaction suffer because of it.
Never.
Because of it, a lot of purchases, almost all of them are going to United Wholesale right now.
Mm-hmm.
We just get them done. On the refinances, I mean, it's just free business.
But it's not always rate, though. It's still a financial strategy, right?
The last podcast of this that I listened to, it was the guy out of Sacramento.
Galvez, Peter.
And
great
I actually
dude.
Emailed him on the train on the way up here because he approaches it very similar to what I do, and I learned a lot from that one. I am not like, oh, you should refinance because you're going to save this much a month. That's not, I mean, that is for some people the reason to refinance, but not most of them. It's here's how much interest you're going to save over a 10-year period. Here's how much lower your loan balance will be
if
you refinance and 10 years later. And now you're looking at a situation, you present it to him. It's like, hey, it's different in different areas, but say anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 in closing costs. But over a 10-year period between interest and between a reduction in debt, your net financial balance sheet is going to be improved by 20 to 50. I had one. It was $115,000. And then I say, do you know what rate of return you would have to get every single year to take $3,000 and grow it into $40,000 without adding anything to it in 10 years? It's always like over 20%.
Yeah.
And you show it to people that way. But I don't oversell it. I'm not like, this is not going to change your life tomorrow. You're not, you know, but this is the type of thing, a line I use a lot is, if you make three or four decisions like this, it becomes a really big deal. And this is how you grow wealth.
I like that.
So can
you say that one more time?
If you make three or four smart decisions like this, they add up to a big deal.
Okay.
And like $20,000 is a ton of money. And some people, that is an absolutely life-changing amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But you do five things like that and you have 100,000, like now, now, like this is the good stuff, you know?
Is there a program that you're using or do you manually calculate a lot?
I have an amortization calculator.
But there's nothing like plop it in and it's going to spit something out. You're doing it manually
because
you don't
want
to screw it up. You want to.
I learn the more I do it. I've thought about looking into some ways to make it a little faster because it does take me a while from when I first let's say I'm looking at a past client, for example, I go back, I look at their CD, I look at what they do, and I show their current one side by side with all the others, and I have an email template I'm happy to share with anyone for kind of what I'm trying to hit on, and it takes me a good 30, 45 minutes to really get it done right, but it's worth it, and our pull through, and I'm not advising people to refinance when it doesn't make sense, and I also show them.
Oh, yeah, I've said no.
If they're 2 years into the refinance, I show them a 28-year, and I say, we might not do this, but it's important to see it because it's a true apples to apples. I'm not trying to I think it, not cheat isn't the right word, but like, if you we do a new 30, out. It's going to go back down, and that's okay if we want to do that.
Depends
but like,
on their situation.
It makes it look better than it is, and I think that's, I don't think that's disingenuous.
You may, that's a good point. The power of no is true.
I people work with us because I, a lot of reasons, but I think they know that we truly have their best interest in mind, and we do. I absolutely do. And I need to, I need to stay that way.
I'm sure you've heard of MBS Highway with, with my buddy Barry Beebe. Yep. Great dude. They just came out with this year about 6 months ago where you can plug in a lot of this.
That's cool.
Dude, it's cool. That you may cool. just want to take a look at it. I'll mean, I have it. You can see it. It might make your life a bit easier with those net numbers, but I know. I don't want to break you off.
It's got to be hard, man.
I know. I got it. I got it. All right, cool. Yeah, what I wanted to touch on there was refinances are important. I mean, a lot of – we get caught up by the big banks or Quicken, whatever, and just trying to throw rate at you with all these – you know, we've seen all the scenarios. And they're important. These are people that bought a house a couple years ago. Maybe they had another kid. Things change, and they don't want to buy another house.
Yep.
They want to literally refinance this for either the short term or long term or both.
Well, and you can and you really can help people. It's not as exciting as buying a house, and I get that. But, like, you run – I encourage everyone, next refinance you look at, run the amortization table, look at how much interest and how much money they're really saving over a 10-year period, and that is awesome. That might mean someone can retire a year.
So
early,
you look at
a
10-year is a good spot. I'm like a 7 to 10.
I'll usually do 10 years. I'll throw five out there. It depends on the situation kind of. And the only other thing I'll say on that is – refinancing, when you help someone buy a house, they're going to tell everyone about it, and that's great. But the people they tell, they might be like, I should buy a house. But it's not like they can buy a house tomorrow. Mm-mm. Maybe, but probably not. But when they go around and tell their coworkers how much money you just saved them, how great you are, anyone that owns a home is going to be like, ah, maybe I should refinance. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going through offices right now. I'm going through a new construction development. It's my favorite, getting all the builder loans, because they got especially ripped off the first time. And the client, this is the one that we're actually saving over a 10-year period, over $100,000 in interest and debt savings. They posted on the neighborhood Facebook page, we're refinancing six of their neighbors right now, and it's awesome. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, here it comes. It's easy business.
Let's, okay, this let's pivot here. Marketing then, mm-hmm. right? Like you just said. You might go to a new construction type where they're building, right? Or now the project's done, right? And then you might be in there posting in some of the groups in there and looking to...
No, they posted for me.
Okay.
In, like, the private one.
With one of your builders?
No. So this was a new construction by, like, MVR Homes or whatever.
All right, okay.
They closed 2 years ago. I helped them so much. And, you know, every neighborhood has, like, a Facebook page.
Oh, I got
you
what
see
you're
what I'm saying. They went on there and...
But
that kind of stuff.
I mean, that's just, again, just doing the right thing from the beginning. Yeah. And you're using, and I love, they're called Hussey's Homeowners. I have a private group. Shout out to my Hussey Homeowners if they listen to this. But they're like my street team.
Hell yeah.
You know, you do right by them. Obviously, we're not perfect. But I think we have a very good track record. Yep. So is you.
Yep.
And they're just going to speak on your behalf.
And that's our marketing. We do some stuff, but really where it is we do a good job. Our margins are very thin.
Mm-hmm.
If we get chopped, it's typically going to be the lowest rate. And people love that. Like, I'm not, you know, a mortgage is a commodity at the end of the day.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people look
at it that realist.
Way. Whether you like it or not, that's the way they're looking at it. And that's all that matters. Your perspective really on how they should feel doesn't matter that much. So our rates are extremely aggressive. And we're in a competitive market as well. And
that's super competitive. DC market, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
there's a lot of money there and big loan amounts. And lots of people want a piece of it, for sure.
Yeah,
So that's the way we, and I don't need to be making as much as possible on every transaction.
No.
I recognize I'm in that market. And if we treat people well and do the right things are going to be
you're
okay.
Fair.
Yep, we're just fair.
Yeah, so marketing, it's really word of mouth and all organic.
Yep.
Is it, besides that, right? What else are you maybe doing? You have some realtor partners?
I have a couple, not as many. When we first opened up the office, and even more so with the brokerage, I had the attitude, and whether I should have or not, like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it my way. I'm not going to spend my day doing a bunch of stuff I don't want to do. And one of them was chasing down realtors. Everyone's chasing them down.
Yeah.
I do have a couple really close realtors that I work with, and I am looking at a couple more, but that's really not the bulk of my business. I grew up where I live. I know a lot of people. And even though, even when I first started originating, it wasn't like I was day one to mortgages. We'd always been the mortgage family, right? I'd been in operations before
that. Yeah, I've always kind of been there.
So you had that built in, and then I do a lot of networking. I am very involved in the Chamber of Commerce in my area. I stay involved in local politics and stuff like that, and I'm just always out there. I'm in a B&I group. I'm a big believer if you find a good B&I group. I think it's any loan officer would be crazy not to try to find one.
Yeah, I haven't been against them. I never was in one, so I can't say that. I'm also crazy, and I see what everyone else is doing. And my idea of marketing is do the complete opposite. And we've started similar B&I groups just with a bunch of friends.
Yeah, well,
but
sure.
This is a good point with people looking to do this. It has to be a good one. Because if you're in a shitty one, right, it's not good.
Yeah, they're hit or miss. I mean, and I'll be the first one to admit it. You have to find a fantastic one. And obviously with a great realtor in there is a big driving factor of it. But if you find a good one, I mean, you have a captive audience. That realtor is going to at least give you a crack. I get a lot of business from the title attorney out of the group, and just anyone with their personal transactions or friends and family, they're going to try to, you know.
Yeah, that's great. CRM. I know we kind of talked about, but what are you using to keep your data, your clients in line? Are you marketing to them at all? I'm assuming not crazy amounts.
No, not
spamming them.
And so we were using Salesforce.
Okay.
And then we were like, we're going to switch over to Arrive. We kind of dropped that. And right now, we're honestly using Excel for it.
I mean,
and Point. I mean, we just will export it from Point, basically. Okay. And that's what I'm using when I'm really going through looking for refinances right now. And also importing mailing lists. We use MailChimp for our newsletter. I send them out. I should do once a month. I probably do it once every 2 months. I write them myself.
That's all. You're a lot like me. You can't. What I love about you is. Testament to Tina again, not to mom.
Tell me more.
Right. Is that like not that other people do, but you're so true to yourself. Your name's on the name of the company. No. You don't sell out. You're writing the newsletters yourself.
Yeah, and that's why I don't get them out as much. But it's important. I think it's good.
Yeah, I used to do one. It was, and this could be because I'm lazy, but it was once a quarter, right?
Yep.
But I made a point in the beginning, like this is not in the subject line. This is not a robot. This is not written. Yep. This is what I'm saying. I just sat here and
yep. And I do similar stuff that makes it obvious.
I
go pretty extreme with
techniques.
Them. I mean, and some people might think they're inappropriate, but like that, you just got to be yourself. And the people that think it's inappropriate probably aren't working with me in the first place, and that's okay, right? So you know, but I get a huge response from them. Last week, I actually sent one out about refinancing, and it. 15 people respond.
Nice.
And I always include pictures of my kids and all of them too.
You see my stuff.
Gotta
pay for their diapers somehow, man, you know? Let's talk a bit about, like you just mentioned, Chamber of Commerce and politics, right? I know, like we said in the beginning with Evan Wade and a couple other people, you went, well, I forget where you're at. This is about 4 or 5, 6 months ago.
We've done it a couple times to CFPB.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more about that, what you're trying to get through or what you did there.
And John Councilman, too. Shout out to John Councilman. Okay. He's the man. If anyone sees him at an event, talk to John Councilman. We went down there, and John set up these meetings. He knows all the regulators and stuff like that. And we're really sitting down there, first telling them about AIM, why AIM exists. And who we truly represent, and when they're talking to us, they are getting basically direct feedback from people on the street, and what we're seeing in the market, what concerns we have, and a lot of people might think we're just like, you should get rid of this regulation, that regulation, that's not the conversation at all. It's really trying to level the playing field for brokers, because there are a lot of regulations that are like only apply to brokers or only apply, but not lenders and not banks, which is total bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And then just giving them feedback really on a lot of bad actors, people that are taking advantage of homeowners, especially veterans, our conversations that we've had
crazy.
With people. And just having a conversation with them, getting to know them. It's like anything else. You build a relationship so that they know that our intentions are true.
Yeah, basically. And how's it being when you're there and you're seeing them face to face? How are they taking it?
Insanely well. I mean, you think of the CFPB like this, they're people and they're trying to do their jobs and they're trying to do a good job and they're not.
And then
we
set up to protect the consumer, right?
Absolutely. And the consumer should be protected. Now, I'm not, there are some regulations that I disagree with.
Sure.
But they have best intentions. They're not out there to kill business or do this or that. They have best intentions and they want to hear. They want to hear from people. And when I first started getting involved in local politics, it's the exact same thing. These legislators, they want to hear from people. And when something made me mad and I first started firing off emails, I couldn't believe like how many, you know, state senators and stuff. I'm like, oh my God, this guy actually responded to me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, right? Like, holy what?
And 2 years ago, I actually, there's a Maryland specific law. Without getting into it too much.
Yeah, yeah, but I wanted to kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah, so there was a law that only applied to brokers. If you or I did the loan for somebody, say we helped them purchase the house, and then a year later rates had dropped a bunch and it makes sense to refinance, we would, as brokers, not be able to profit off that refinance. We'd have to do it for free. So
that's a
24-month, you were not allowed to do two loans for somebody in a 24-month period.
Okay. Wow.
Only brokers. Total BS. And it was an anti-churning. I had good intentions, yada, yada, but like made no sense whatsoever. Was completely overlapped by federal regulations and yada, yada. You get the idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, well, this is bullshit. So I emailed the senator that was proposing repealing it and was like, whatever I can do to support you, here's how I feel about the matter, et cetera, et cetera. And within a half hour, his assistant had emailed me back. We would love to have you come testify in 2 weeks. So I went down and testified for the bill, and it got passed, and it was really cool.
Holy shit. And hold on. So you were like, this is bullshit, yeah. Right? Then I think we said bullshit a lot on this, yeah, but I mean, love it. When can I start throwing F-bombs on this? No. So you started this, then you went down, and it got some.
Well, I didn't start it. Not people started, had already put it in place, and the local Maryland Association, too.
Hitting hard on it.
Yeah, and I emailed the guy, and one thing led to another, and I was like, this is so awesome. Of course I'll come testify.
And so now in Maryland, that doesn't exist anymore?
It doesn't exist.
Holy, that's awesome.
It's awesome. And like at the time, it was like rates were going up, and I'm like, this doesn't matter to me, but like this is important. It's, mm-hmm. This is wrong, and it needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this year, I need to add up all the loans that I've done, refinances that I've done that I would not be able to do otherwise if that law was still in place. So it's really cool.
That's cool. Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. And you're putting people in better financial planes. The reason that was kind of in place because of the like churning and just trying to show a lower rate to entice people to refi, even though there's all these costs here. We can get into that all day.
It was cool.
That's cool, man. Well, congrats. That's cool.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, so we have about 5-10 minutes.
Okay.
All right. I want to know, since you've been in this your whole life and you started not as an LO,
okay,
right? If someone was getting into the business today,
okay,
and let's say as a loan officer, right? What do you suggest? Where do they start?
Where do they start? Learn it as much as you can about operations and underwriting and guidelines as humanly possible, but then just know when you can say, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's okay to say, I don't know, I'll get back to you. That's my best advice.
The back end first before you start going and selling.
Yep. And a lot of times, I think the broker channel is at the end of the day the best option for the consumer and the best option for most originators. But sometimes it can be hard to find a bigger broker shop. I think that's changing rapidly. That sure. really has the training,
mm-hmm.
And all the resources put into place that a brand new loan officer is going to need. Frankly, I don't have it.
No.
I'm not a good place for a brand new loan officer. And in our area, local lenders are really strong, and sometimes they can provide that lending or that learning curve that they need. So they can become brokers eventually, because you are jumping into the deep end when you become a broker. Great.
And AIM has a lot of resources. I know they're working on it. That could be a good spot to start.
No, there's a ton. UWM as well. I mean, what we did, we reached out to HomePoint, actually, and they put us in an amazing situation when we knew we were going to make the jump. They basically processed our entire broker application, except for the final thing, so that when we went live,
they
pushed a button and we could start originating immediately. And we'll always appreciate them for that. But
nice.
Yeah, I mean, I wish the Become a Mortgage Broker program UWM has now existed when we were, because we would have made a few
and
less
mistakes. And it's growing. You're seeing more and more. Yeah, just in this 1 year that I've been in the business, everything, so much has evolved. I feel like I've been in the broker world for 10 years. It's been less than a year for me.
It's been cool.
All right, last question. I usually ask, where do you see the industry? Where do you want to see the industry in, let's say, 5 years? Since you're doing some lobbying and what you're trying to change, where do you want to see it? That's a loaded question.
It also doesn't matter what I want. We'll see if it happens or not. I would love to see an even playing field between brokers, lenders, and banks, and full transparency.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even mind that we have to disclose our compensation and stuff like that. It's transparent. People know it's fine,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think it should be the same for everybody. Where I think it's going to go, I'm not one of those the sky is falling, but I do think technology is changing our industry. And I don't think computers are going to take our jobs, but I acknowledge that it's possible. And I'm behaving in a way that accounts for the fact that it may move that way. And maybe it won't take my job, but it could take other ones.
Sure.
So highlighting all our advantages, my expertise, our personal touch, and I've looked at this year, another boost to refinances. I just want to acquire as many clients as humanly possible. So they're in my sphere, and the next time they need a transaction, yeah, they come right back to me.
And quite honestly, I think they're in better hands too, bro.
I appreciate that.
All right, thank you. Brendan McKay, man. Thanks, man.
I love
appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Broker to Broker podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel so you don't miss a single episode. Head over to aimgroup.com/broker to broker and subscribe on any platform where you listen to podcasts.